Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unboxing Women, where we explore the gender gap in the music and entertainment industry. If you're active in the music business, an independent artist, a musician, or are just curious about how it all works, then this pod is for you. My name is Dana Rex, and with me is my friend Micah Rose, and we are both independent recording artists based in Europe. After having been called a bitch for knowing what we want, we were fed up and decided to be such a bitch and reveal what really goes on behind the scenes. You can listen to us on your favorite podcast platform and our YouTube channel. All right, today the topic is, who does an independent artist need on their team? First of all, why should you even care about what we have to say about this topic? What makes us knowledgeable? Micah.
Well, I guess we've kind of gone through a lot of it and have some experience. I think there is always a part which is individual. So obviously don't take everything we say as law, but we have some experiences to share and we'd like to do that today.
Let me go over my CV, if you will.
There's a difference between Dana and me as well, because we are independent artists, but Dana has been doing this for longer and has a larger fan base, has a lot more experience in these things. But I have to say, I also have had some experience so far. And it's really interesting to see the differences and also what I maybe as a slight novice still think I should have, but then realize I don't need.
We'll see.
So, yeah, we'll see. Let's have a little discussion.
I've been screwed over more. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, true.
Well, I've been working on my Dana Rex independent artist project since 2014 now. And before that, I've also always been in music in different capacities. So I was a club DJ for years, a producer on a label. So with a, you know, like signed to a label. I worked in a music store as a teenager. I was a singer in cover bands. And when I was in my 20s, I organized raves for like, I don't know, 5,000 people and proposed like the lineups for those, consequently booking the DJs, also managing contracts, payments, timetables. And I've also worked for a house music label and did the same for them, basically for their now sold out 2-day festival, Legacy Fest. I did the bookings for their DJs throughout the whole of the year, not only for the festival, represented them at music conferences, and I was a stage manager at Legacy Fest and at their hosted stages, like at Tomorrowland. So these are big, big events.
Yeah.
People who listen to house music will know Tomorrowland in Belgium. So, I mean, I must admit, though, that with the Dana Rex project, I have learned the most. Because I was totally on my own, working so hard on it and met so many scammers along the way. I mean, if I had known all the things I know now, I think especially my work at the house label would have been a lot different.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have had more angles to work on. And definitely when I was a producer signed to a label in the 2000s, I didn't even know half of what I know now with regards to copyright, publishing, licensing, you know, these are topics that you need to know about if you're an independent artist, even though they are complicated. And with Dana Rex, I've released 2 EPs and a bunch of singles, 17 songs in total now, worked with producers, managers, PR agents, pluggers, not only in Belgium, but in the Nordics, in Germany, in the UK, USA, both East and West Coast, and even in Russia, which looks bad now, but yeah.
Russia had a really big electronic scene, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, it was mostly for my remixes, yeah. But so right now, I'm gearing up actually to work with a couple of East Asian countries and some people over there. So yeah, if I look at that list... It's like, oh, you've been around, while I still feel like I know nothing.
It's so strange.
Yeah, I mean, I still, it's like the imposter syndrome. You still doubt yourself, and you know all these things, and you've been through so much, and still you're like, oh, but you know,
Yeah.
Do I know what I'm doing? I'm not entirely
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, actually, like listening to you list all these things, at first I was like, oh my God, oh my God, wow, oh my God. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, no, actually, you've worked with a couple of people too. I was like, okay, yeah, you forget these things as well.
Yeah.
You kind of go like, oh, well, because like I'm not super famous, I must know nothing, which is absolute bullshit.
I'm not super famous.
Well, no, well, you might be at some point.
I might be.
Yeah.
But I might be soon.
Well, that's kind of not the point, though, is it? It's kind of talking to independent artists, really. Because we actually, I think this was really, this episode was spawned by us talking to Assault Ashes, because we realized we just really liked talking to other independent artists and kind of listening to how they have gone through similar things. And we just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a guideline of what has happened and what we would look out for in the future. Mm-hmm. So with no further ado, let's just kind of jump into it.
Okay, so what comes first? All of this is besides making and releasing music, okay? So we won't be discussing like distributor platforms and producers or mastering engineers, you know? This is, you have music out, and like the first person you need to find, in my opinion, in my experience, is a good lawyer who is specialized in the music business and in copyright and publishing law. I had heard this first one a long time ago. And did I take that advice, Micah? No, I did not. And I got myself into trouble. So yeah, I'm from Belgium, right? So when I heard this being said by an American, I thought, well, sure, you know, in the US, you need this because everybody sues everybody else. And, you know, you better watch what you sign.
Yeah.
And I thought, but I'm in Europe and I'm educated and, you know, I have a household and a car and I've survived all the legal and administrative stuff around that. So I'm perfectly capable of reading my own contracts, you know, and judging if they are good for me to sign or not. Well, turns out, not so much. Oh my God. So yeah, these rights are so intricate. Even if a contract seems fair or just, there's just small details that you don't think of or know of that should be there and or shouldn't be there. And you just need someone to know the law fully and to know how things work and see the whole picture, right?
Yeah.
So if you were to do that for yourself, you'd have to become an expert. And that means becoming the lawyer yourself. So you know, just get yourself one before you sign anything. And I mean anything, okay? So don't sign a label contract or a publishing contract. Don't. Even publishing admin, watch out. Trust me, you know. The small fee they'll ask you to read the document and send their recommendations does not stand up to the shitstorm you will face. And I say will, not may face, if you do not get help on things like that, you know.
Yeah, because it's really easy to accidentally sign a lot of your rights away, even if it's not apparent. And also just kind of the whole system of how is it paid and do you pay them or do they take it out of your royalties? In which case, I remember I learned music business in university because I studied music. And
Doesn't that make you more of an expert than I am? Because well, I didn't study it.
No, I think you've gone through the study of life. So no, but I remember it was very specific to the UK because I studied in Cardiff. So basically my music business tutor or professor back then, she said that it's always better to have a contract that enables them to have a cut of your royalties instead of paying them a fee up front. Because if you pay them, they will not want to do anything for you because they will get that money whether they do the publishing or not. So whether they get you any sort of income through your music or not. Mm-hmm. In which case, if they get a cut from your royalties, they will have to work for you to get you some money to be able to get some money themselves.
They're more likely, yeah. This is true for distributors as well, but that's going to be another episode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, about this lawyer, I've done it myself. Mm-hmm. Please learn from my mistakes. So what I've done is also I've trusted some lawyer friend of my stepdad's who said, yeah, you know, I can help as a favor to your stepdad. And, you know, he was not specialized in copyright or music law. And
you need somebody who's specialized.
Yeah. He didn't understand like half the things that he was reading. So I had to explain the rules of copyright to him myself. And I signed the contract anyway. And we didn't catch the things that were actually important. So I hate saying, don't do this or don't do that. But this is like a big one. Even if there's
really
like
is.
A lawyer. Yeah. You need a music copyright and like music business lawyer.
And that doesn't mean, oh, I'm paying him a retainer. He's always there. It's just like you need to know one and you need to be able to send it to them. Be like, can you look over this and tell me if it's okay to sign or not?
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, because there's always going to be things in the contract that will be not fair for your side.
Yeah.
And that your lawyer will want to have changed. You know, they usually send you their comments and then plan a meeting with you to go over the text and explain everything one by one. So how do you go about finding a music business lawyer? You know, if you have been playing for a while, you might have a network of other musicians or music professionals to ask for recommendations. So that's where you can start if you've been playing for a while.
Yeah.
Always use your gut feeling. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, in Germany, there's a website called Music Women Germany, and it lists all sorts of women who are in the entertainment industry. So that goes from photographers over lawyers over radio pluggers and everything. You get all those women listed there. You can email them via the website, and that's a really good resource to be able to find a music lawyer.
Yeah. There are a couple of American ones as well, which we can list in the show notes.
Yeah.
So always also follow your gut feeling. And if you don't like someone, then don't go into business with them. That's also one of my mistakes.
That is biggest thing, honestly.
It was so bad because you kind of make yourself believe that, oh, but, you know, this guy is so knowledgeable and
knows all these people and does all these things for other people.
Yeah, but you don't know that. No. They mostly just, I mean, we have discussed, you know, in another episode, we've discussed scams and just be careful. If your gut feeling says, I don't like this person, then go on to the next, you know. Do your research on everyone that is recommended to you. And then besides your network, you can also go to your PRO. Or National Music Export Office for advice, for example.
Yes.
And if you don't have this place to start, then there is always the internet. You know, you can Google copyright lawyers in a city near you, have a look at their websites, contact them, schedule a meeting, go and have a free, the first one is free, or, you know, the getting to know them is free, a chat with them to see if you feel they are the one you need or you want to work with.
You can also always go, I think that's what you said with the PRO, so you can go to your the company where you have your rights. So basically in Germany it's the GEMA, in the UK it's the PRS and PPL and VPL. So that's different
your PRO.
Videos, etc. Exactly. Yeah. So your PRO, they will have a list of music lawyers as well. So that's a really good resource to find someone.
Yeah. And you don't need to already have a contract that they can start work on then and there, you know. That will actually just put more pressure on you to choose quickly rather than wisely. As the one issuing you the contract will probably have, you know, put a deadline on it, or, you know, you don't want to wait with this. Start finding a lawyer now before you actually need them. On top of this, this is good to know, is that lawyers may know about other opportunities within the music scene in your region that may apply to you. So in Europe, this is less the case, but in the US, it is very often the lawyer who gets the band or the solo artist, the label or publishing deal, or whatever it is that they can find for you, because they're in that world and know about who is looking for what, etc. And then we'll put their clients forward first, of course. Mm-hmm. So this is also a good one to know. But yeah, in Europe, I've seen that happen less. In the US, it's apparently, it's all about the lawyers. It's all about the lawyers. They are actually
in the US, it's all about kind of who you know. And that,
yeah, and they know everyone. That's the thing, yeah. So, who is next, Micah, for you?
I feel like probably a publicity or social media manager, mm-hmm. Something like that. So you can have someone, if you have a song released or are releasing songs or albums, you can do a lot of that yourself. And we do a lot of that ourselves. But sometimes it is helpful to have somebody to either take away that stress from you or to just be able to access parts that you can't access. So it be that maybe large magazines if you have a big enough audience, or maybe even TV shows. All these things kind of go through publicity. So PR.
Yeah, publicity agents. Yeah, we've had a couple of publicity agents as guests on the show. Steph to the Max from Whoa, That's Fresh. publicity. And Ashley also, who also worked at Whoa, That's Fresh. We'll put the links in the show notes. But a publicity agent, so what do they do? They have a network of blogs, magazines. They can even get you onto special things. Like, I remember that I used a publicity agent, a PR agent, and she got me on Fox News. So this is national in the US, in a little piece about music that Fox News does two times a week, I think, after their news or something. Like, say, okay, these are like the new albums this week. I was mentioned on there with a very short piece of one of my videos. And so they can get a lot of stuff done, and they have like a whole network. So they obviously, nobody guarantees results, but if they do take you on, then, you know, they won't do that if they can't get you like even one result, obviously, because they also have to keep their image high. And if they have an artist that they're working with for which they got like zero things, that doesn't reflect well on them either. So,
well, they also are obviously because of that, they are picky about who they take on
also,
they take on people who they think will do well in their network. So they have a specific network that is styled towards a specific genre, maybe, or a couple of specific genres, but obviously not all of them. And if you don't fit in that network, then they won't get you.
Yeah. Yeah, so you'll have to talk to a couple or see if you find lists with PR agents and see if one, you know, is working with artists that are similar to you, and then submit your music. And but these people, you do have to pay them, they won't be getting money out of, so they won't be able to like make you money where they can get a cut out of. You'll have to pay them for their work. That's one thing. What else can we say about publicity agents?
Well, I think I would, I've worked with a publicity agent who I basically just hired for one video, and I would not recommend it, honestly, because I think I could have gotten pretty much the same or better results if I'd done it myself. At the end of the day, all he did was do online ads, which I could have done myself. So you really only want to be getting a publicity agent if they are actually getting you into magazines and blogs.
Sounds more like a marketing person, like he's doing social media ads for you, but that's not what a publicity
should be doing.
Then, if your music is fit for radio, obviously that is very subjective. So, best to get an objective, like some person, some kind of expert to maybe comment on this or guide you. But then a radio plugger, it would also be good. And I mean, it's okay if your songs are not fit for radio. Mine, for example, are not fit for mainstream radio. Yeah. Mine is very niche. So, you know.
Mine are usually too long.
Too long. There you go. Yeah. That's another problem. I only sent Rebel, for example, to a handful of more extreme radio programs because the national ad-funded ones will only play Ed Sheeran, you know. So
yeah.
I'm not going to waste my time and their time because it only puts me in a bad light if I like send every single to them that I release while I know that it's not for their audience.
You really kind of need to think about the audience they're targeting because you don't want to be, as Dana said, you don't want to be sending your stuff to everybody and they look at it and they're like, well, this is dark pop. I do, you know, I don't know, rock, you know, like old school rock. Why are they sending this to me? And then you will kind of be less likely to, like, people talk, you know, people talk behind the scenes. And it's very easy to be seen as a person that you don't want to be.
As a spammer.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get yourself blocked.
That's actually a really good way to see it because it is kind of like, oh, it's just they're not doing their research. Like, you don't want people looking you up for gigs and then like being like, oh yeah, we do like a rock show and we want you. And you're there like, but I do like love songs.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want that. So it's the same the other way around. You need to kind of think of it that way.
Mm. Exactly, yeah. And I mean, for me, I'm also in a very tiny country that is even split up by two languages, so it gets even smaller. So I actually have just done the research myself now. I did use a plugger before for my older songs, but now I've just researched the main radios and the bulk of the local ones that are tracked by my PRO in my country. They have lists of radios that they track. So this might be interesting to have a look at on your PRO's website. So, I mean, let's be honest. If the radio is not tracked, it won't bring you anything to be played on them anyway, because then they're so tiny that there won't be any revenue either. And I just send it to radios personally. So I research, like, okay, I have a look at what does this radio play. I try to find the people working there and their email address. It's not super hard. Or like there's some have even a submission email address or a form that you can fill out on their website. And a lot of the local ones actually have played some of my more radio-friendly songs in the past in Belgium. So now I just don't use a plugger anymore. I just did the research. Obviously, you know, for like a huge country, that might be hard. But start with your region then, you know?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You can do this. You can do this. Yes, it's a lot of work. But you either put in the time yourself and then that's the price you pay, or you have to pay money to somebody to do it for you and then you win that time back. So it's either you pay in time or you pay in money.
Yeah,
that's it.
Which is a basic for all of these things. Like, you can become an expert in all of these things, except maybe lawyer. You can, but it'll take you
really a lot of long time.
Where there isn't a network required, and even sometimes where there is a network required, because some of these things you can research and you can kind of build up your own network, but where there isn't a network required, you can do it yourself.
Yeah,
you don't need to. The thing is, I would love if working with people would always be as seamless as you would want it to be. I would love for that to work and for you to be able to trust everybody you kind of come across and for them to be as excited about your music as you are. And sometimes that does happen. And those times are great. And those are the people you really want in your life. But you are the one who is passionate about your music. You are the one who is driving the car. You are not in the passenger seat. If you are stuck in the passenger seat and somebody's going at a different speed and you want to be going like, I don't know, 100 kilometers an hour and they're driving like 30, you are going to be super frustrated. You're going to get upset. You're going to get angry. You're going to be like, I don't understand why this isn't going anywhere. I'm with the right people. Everything is kind of the way it should be. But it's not, because you are the person with the drive and the passion, and you need to make it happen. And that's the thing I feel like gave me the most, I don't know, the most insight into how I want to be working in the music industry, because nobody is ever going to love your music as much as you do.
Yeah, totally true. Wise words.
Except maybe for fans.
Well, let's hope so. I wanted to say for pluggers also that don't forget that they also submit your songs for sync onto the TV channel's informative interludes. I don't really know how to... what the English term is for these informative interludes, but it's when, before or after the ads, when a channel lets you know about their own programming, like, oh, next Thursday, don't miss ladies' movies night with two movies back-to-back with Sandra Bullock, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I use this as an example because one of my songs was used in exactly that. Yeah, they use my song Right Here, Right Now alongside Run the World by Beyoncé for a whole week to announce their Thursday Ladies Movie Night special. Yeah, I even have the extract that you can check out on my EPK page on my website that is public, so you can go and check it out. And another song of mine, Last Man Standing, was also used in this way. So in like the informative interlude, whatever we're going to call it. But I never saw it, so I'm not sure what it was used for. I only knew it 6 months after, when I got a significant payout from my PRO for that song. So, you know, no, they don't let you know. They just use it when it you know, it's for this kind of channel owned stuff. So there are no upfront fees. It's not like another sync, you know, for an ad. It's not for a brand. So it's different. But this was, yeah, I mean, this actually made me a little bit of money and put my song out there. And now I even have like the extract that I can show on my EPK. So that's really cool.
Yeah. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And also for that, I do that myself now. So I have figured out via a combination of websites, apps on Google Chrome. This is not a secret, you know, that like figure out what email addresses there are. And LinkedIn is a good one to find people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually send my songs now directly to the people who do that kind of thing with music on the national Belgian channels. So who knows, in the future, you know, another one of my songs might be used for that.
So who else do we need, Dana?
Well, you actually touched upon it already. So highly recommend a marketing agent if indeed you're not doing it yourself. There's actually a great course you can take yourself as an artist. It's called Indiepreneur. I will put the link in the show notes. And it teaches you, well, you have to put in a little bit of time. It teaches you a lot about social media ads on Facebook, and they also do updates about the new Facebook, because Facebook and the ads manager, they are changing all the time.
Constantly.
Like, oh, mm-hmm. It's so annoying, because you learn one thing and then even 1 month later, it just doesn't work anymore that way because Facebook has changed something. I don't know. So you can actually get a subscription there, or you can pay like a one-time fee, whatever you want to do. And you can learn about doing ads on social media right now. Let's face it, this is the world we live in, and you can't really not be growing your social media, because you do have to, you know, make your fan base somewhere. Always also ask these people to subscribe to your newsletter that you own yourself, so that if Facebook and Instagram or TikTok disappear, like MySpace, then then you know, you don't lose the connection. Yeah, exactly. So always have a newsletter that you manage yourself. Obviously, at Indiepreneur or any other place where you have gotten like free webinars about this stuff, they will always tell you this as well. So that is absolutely true. Do that. And then, for social media ads, I do recommend to grow your fan base on social media platforms with some kind of marketing agent if you don't want to do it yourself. You know, you can always also have somebody do playlisting campaigns, but there is a catch to those. These must not be payola. So not pay for play. to add your song to these playlists, you know. And yes, you know, I could hear everybody think, but, you know, who's going to want to add a song without being paid if they have like a great playlist out there? You know, that's why they have this playlist. That's why they grew this playlist, right? But they are out there. And why do you need to pay this playlister agent then? Well, they have put in a lot of time and effort into finding these legit playlists that they that have a big following, you know, and that they have like a good relationship with. There's good listenership and everything. And they also use tools like Spot on Track or Chartmetric, for which they need to pay a subscription. So, you know, you can't ask a playlister to do that stuff for free, because they've put a lot of time and effort and maybe money into it as well. So yeah, they keep their network fresh by regularly interacting with these playlisters, and they stay on top of mind so that when your song is released and they're working your song, they'll be quick to add it to those playlists and, you know, keep it on their playlists for a long time. So this is actually really good. But finding a legit playlister agent is very hard, because this is where all the scammers are.
Yeah. It is absolutely insane. I've never worked with a playlister myself, but I also haven't had a lot of songs on a lot of playlists. I've had some local playlists just add me, which is always interesting. You kind of just kind of have a look and see, and every time, like, if you do get added to a playlist, I always kind of remember and then thank them, and then you and when you've got a new song out, you'd be like, hey, I've got a new song out.
Remember the playlist that added you, and then you can hit them up yourself. That's how you grow your network.
So it's really interesting. But I find also the big playlists that that are legit, they obviously, they don't want money, and they say it. What was it? What's it called? Is it Indie Momo or something? There's a...
Indie Mono. Yeah.
There's an Instagram account from them, and they have a lot of different playlists, and they specifically send out reminders all the time being like, don't trust playlists that ask you to pay, because they're not legit. And it's not actually legal. It's not legal to ask for payment.
Yeah. And then you'll see that the list in itself is on the basis of whoever pays them. So there's no real theme to the list. Well, you know, I mean, it may have like the title Rock Out, but then when you actually listen to the playlist, there's anything on it like dance or singer-songwriter.
So nobody actually listens to it either, because it's so confusing.
Yeah. So avoid these by all costs. Mm-hmm. Research your playlists, have a listen, and if the songs are in the same theme, then, you know, this is a good candidate. Also, because if you're added to one of those others, they fuck up your algorithm and get you into bad papers with the streaming platform.
Yeah.
You know, also places. Yeah, this is very dangerous. And sadly, places like SubmitHub, Playlist Push. Oh my God. If anybody from like Mike Warner's network hears this, they're going to be so pissed at me. But yeah, Playlist Push and Muzo Soup and SubmitHub. I'm dissing these page submission platforms. Why? Because I've tried them myself. And I have heard so many praise about them, but I have found that they are total bullshit. You know, there's only rubbish on there that will not help your profile or listener count one bit, you know, or they're super expensive and you're paying the playlister directly, which looks and feels so bad, and that can get you into trouble. So I do think that SubmitHub is a legit place for submissions for publicity and press. If you have like a decent budget and you want to keep control yourself versus paying a PR agent, then, you know, you can pitch to the major blogs there and have a chance. But still, better is paying a PR agent who will, you know, work their network for you. And you know, they will pay some platforms to add you, to add a review of your song or anything. I mean, but that's the name of the game, you know. At least you'll get into the good ones if you have a PR agent. For example, I don't know if anybody knows this, everyone is so impressed when you appear on the Huffington Post, right? But it just takes $20. And ta-da!
Wow.
So the trick is to know who to ask and who to pay. But Huffington Post is not, you know, you can literally, they ask for $20. you pay $20 and they will put like your press release on Huffington Post. They won't post it on their social media or anything, but you will have like a post on the Huffington Post website to repost via your social media. So it's not that, Huffington Post is not that hard, but it's like, ooh, everybody's like, ooh, my God. But yeah, this is like, this is inside secrets, everybody. Oh my God, they're going
to... And that's what you're here for.
Hashtag such a bitch. They're going to hate me. Going to hate me. But yes, this is true.
Going to hate everybody. The thing is, though, a lot of the time, that's what it is. It looks... This is why social media or a lot of artists are so stressed and also kind of weirded out by social media, because it just...
Well, this is imposter syndrome.
Well, yeah. Yes, but it all looks super impressive. But then, like, you know what it took to get there, and you forget about the years of work you put in to actually get your music there. And then you think, well, I just kind of paid $20 and got on the Huffington Post. And you think it's like, And then like everybody's like, oh my God. And it's
and then
just
you're
kind
like,
of,
I don't deserve this.
Exactly. So you kind of, it really triggers the imposter syndrome knowing all of these things.
I know. But still, it's stuff that they want you to have. They're like, oh, but you don't have any notable, like, you know, press release places or, you know, and it's just, you need to create your own buzz as well. Because also for Spotify playlisting, for their algorithmic ones, Spotify does like crawl the web and has a look at where your name pops up. And if you can, you know, get onto the Huffington Post, even if it is because you paid $20, Huffington Post is still a legit place that, you know, if they scan it, that will be, you know, good. So, and this is literally what PR agents do as well. They have a network. They know exactly who to call for this. There will be posts that they actually pay for to get you, but there will also be posts that they can get organically or because of their network, because, you know, they're like, oh my God, this is like the perfect artist for this magazine because it fits right into, you know, it's right up their alley. And then that will be for free, and that will be because you have this specific PR agent. So yeah, I mean, there's a dark side to everything, and there's a lot of dark sides in the music industry.
Yeah. But to be fair, I feel like Spotify algorithmic playlists are something you can definitely get on if you kind of have a little bit of buzz.
Yeah.
So that's really something. The editorial one's different, but you still have a shot there as well. You can submit them yourself. Like, you just need your Spotify artist thing, and then you can submit your songs yourself.
Yeah.
So it's and that's actually how playlisters in at least in Germany do it as well. It's just they know the people and can say, okay, for this playlist I would suggest this.
Yeah. So you can do it for Apple Music now as well. You can submit before your song is out, you can submit in Apple Music for like playlisting as well.
Exactly.
Like you can do on Spotify. So anyway, yes. What else is there? A publisher, I would say this is a whole nother spider's web, and we are going to have a conversation about this in another episode where I'll tell you what makes a publisher good or bad and what the difference is between a publisher and publishing admin. So let's skip that one for now. So if you're interested in this topic, then please listen to the episode following this one.
To be continued.
To be continued.
Yes. I mean, we've already talked about managers as well. We have a whole episode on that. Was it 51?
We covered this in episode 51. Why having a manager is overrated. So that's its own answer. You don't need a manager, you know.
You don't need one. But you do need to listen to the episode, because then you will understand why.
Yes. Good one.
So I think we've covered the basics. There's obviously other things that everybody always is like, oh, but do I need a booker? Do I need this? Do I need that? And we were actually just talking about that, because I think at the beginning, a lot of people think, oh, but I need to be doing live shows, so I need somebody to be booking my shows. And at the end of the day, bookers will only really actually add you to their roster if you have enough buzz already. So the first shows you're doing, you will have to do yourself. You will have to organize. You will have to maybe, I don't know, book out Maybe book out a place and book out a venue and just kind of do all the marketing and stuff and get people there. Depending on the size of your fan group, you know, you never know. But you should be sure about these things before you invest a lot of money. So try and start small and, you know, just work your way up. And yeah.
It's better to have, like, if you are going to just rent out a location and then, you know, have it be like your gig, you know, then because people don't know that you rented out the location just like, you know, privately just to do this gig, you know, you can still sell tickets or whatever. Obviously, you need to watch out because you need to be allowed to sell tickets. So you need to be like self-employed or again. Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or you can talk to that venue and see, you know, if you can just pay them for all the non, you know, the tickets that weren't sold or whatever. You know, there's always a way, but please, please do start small because you actually need to be sold out. So you need to have, we prefer you to have a venue of like 50 people that is sold out when you're actually playing and is full than to play in a thing with 2000 that can, you know, where 2000 people can stand and you have like 30 people in front of you, because that's bad. Okay. So yeah. Start small, but fill it.
Yes.
The smaller, the better. Just the smaller, the better. Fill it. And then you can move on if you've done that for a couple of times. And if you've, that's how you create buzz around yourself, you know, for like bookers or whatever. It's like, oh my God, they sold out. Yeah. Oh, you know, and now people are lining up because they notice that you're sold out and they can't get a ticket anymore. But, oh, you know, I wanted to see that person too. And then people start talking. Oh my God, it was there and it was full. And, you know, so this is good.
It was such a great atmosphere. And
yeah.
Especially now that COVID's kind of hopefully slowing down and people are allowed to go to gigs again, you've kind of got the whole kind of atmosphere of being in a gig and just packed tight with people like sardines. And you're just like, yes, back to gigging.
Goodness. Yeah. That's something, you know, bookers, is they're like labels. They won't be interested if you cannot show them that you have people who will either, you know, like buy into your music or buy a ticket or something like that. So
yeah, I think the best way we can kind of describe it is labels and bookers and stuff, they work like banks giving out loans.
Yeah.
They will not, like a bank will not, you can't even get a credit card without showing that you get income monthly in a specific amount. So it's the exact same principle. You need to show that you have a steady fan base and steady income, really, for them to be able to be like, yes, okay, this is a safe bet. They will not take risks most of the time.
Yep, exactly. All right. Is there anything else you want to say about any of those?
I don't think so. I think that's all for today. So next episode, definitely have a look in. We'll talk about publishers and there's a whole lot to talk about. So thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Unboxing Women. If you've ever had an experience you'd like to share with us, send us a DM or tag us in your post with the hashtag #suchabitch or send us an email on suchabitch@unboxingwomen.com. Don't forget to drop us a like on Instagram or wherever you're listening, or both, you know, feel free. My name is Mike Rose and I've been chatting with Dana X, and tune into another episode of Unboxing Women next week. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you soon.
Bye. I forgot the damn banner again. Fuck.